What's up, everybody?
Yeah.
We're live. Dude. So, what you think about Derek Lively, dude? Let's talk about Derek Lively. Because everybody wants to talk about some Derek Lively. Let's talk about some Derek Lively.
All right, man. I'm down with Derek Lively. First of all, if you're looking at him as a guy that's going to come in and play right away, then you're not understanding what his game is truly. He is a guy that's a great defender. I mean, truly spectacular defender. I think he averaged like 4.7 or almost 5 block shots per 40 minutes. He can block shots on the perimeter, block shots inside. I mean, just all over the board when it comes to defense. But when it comes to offense, man, when he gets the ball, and I watched enough film on him with Duke that in film and games, when he got the ball sometimes, it was I don't know how to explain it. It was almost as if he didn't know what to do with the ball. You know, like he would get the ball and he'd be like, okay, what to do? You know, like, and that comes with repetition. You know, like he'll be all right with that, but he needs to learn how to have success on the defensive side or offensive side. The lob threat, he's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is there all day long. You can lob him up. But the thing is that every single time I watched him get the ball in his buckets that were easy, right? Shane. It was all about lofting, a point guard lofting, a shooting guard lofting him the ball, giving him gift baskets, essentially, of like, here you go, here's some fruit, here's some vegetables, and here's a pair of headphones. Like, that's what the point guards were doing for him, you know? And I like it. I feel like that's exactly what you need, you know, as far as a player that can pick and roll and then roll off of it and go for the lob. You need... but the thing is that as much as I like him, I think of Dwight Howard, you know, like how much Dwight Howard was great for his time period. And then all of a sudden, you know, the shooting big man has kind of came this way to the point where Dwight isn't really needed in the league, even though Dwight could play in the league. But his lob threat, baseline threat that he was there, that the league needed, and the physical defense of a big man like that, it's not necessarily needed anymore. So his offensive game has got to get better. His jump shot was just, you know, wanting. His hook shot was wanting. His layups that when he would go towards the bucket instead of dunking, his layups were just, I mean, I think he shot like 13 for like 30 or something like that. Gosh. With layups. So there's so many things that I look at him and I say, he would be a great second pick for this team. You know, that player that we get to develop for the future. Because if he was able to develop his offensive game to go with his defensive game, he could be an incredibly impactful team or a player for this team for a championship run.
Yeah.
But he's just one of those guys where his defense is so much more spectacular than his offense that he is still going to get people to pick him in the probably the lottery because of it, mid-lottery. I'd say mid-lottery. I'd say probably like 18, 19, 20 is my guess is where he'll go. You know, cheap enough where Sam Presti, if he wanted – Derek to, you know, proceed with developing his offensive game, he could get him.
So when I see him play, I think he could end up like a JaVale McGee, maybe a DeAndre Jordan. But then I'm like, if he is a defensive stopper in the league, he could end up being more like a Walker Kessler. Sure. What are the chances he ends up like Walker Kessler? Because I would rather Walker Kessler than JaVale McGee. I think everybody would.
Well, I look at Walker Kessler, and I still think that his shot could develop more.
Yeah.
Like, he has good form, and, well, mostly good form. With Derek, though, I watch his form on his jump shots, and I just see, like, you know how those shooting coaches will look at a shot and be like, oh, yeah, I'll fix your shot in, like, 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. Someone else would be like, you know, take a look at another player and say, yeah, that guy's going to need, like, a year to fix his shot. Because you don't go and fix a player's shot like everything at one time. You go, you know, mechanically, little by little by little, you know? I look at Derek Lively and I say, this dude's shot is broken with all due respect to his game because, again, he's going to be a top 20 pick in this draft because of his defensive game. So you're not drafting him for his offensive game, right? Mm-hmm. You're just not doing that. So I look at Lively and I say, maybe 18 months I could fix that shot. You know, like, and that's the thing about it is that I'm not necessarily a shooting coach, but I know how to recognize how long it's going to take a player to fix his shot, you know, and maybe his shot would be okay when he gets the consistency with it. But I think that he needs a lot of work, and you know, coaching England would be perfect for that environment for him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, man. Like, maybe his 7'7" wingspan. The thing is about it, his defense, man. Like, it was crazy, man. Like, he could just stand there and just block stuff. He reminded me of Dwight Howard, the way he blocked shots, like, vertically wise. Mm-hmm. He didn't need a running stop to block him. He didn't need, if a player got around him, he would block him from the, or if he got around him and he got beat, he would find a way to block his shot. Like, he's incredibly gifted like that. And I look at him, I'm like, this would be a great project player. If you're expecting Derek to come on right away and just start playing all the time, like, that's great. And he could do that until they start making him shoot shots, which will be game 4 or 5 of him. They're like, nope, make him shoot a shot. Don't let him go baseline. Don't let him get on that step out. Make him shoot a shot. And the second you do that, then he's a liability on offense. And we all know, Oklahoma City Thunder fans and NBA fans knows what happens when you have a liability on the offensive end with a center. Like, it really hinders, you know, the flow of the game. And that's the one thing I get concerned about, is that because of that, he needs enough time to get better. So I think he would do great in the Oklahoma City Thunder system. I really do. But, you know, like I said, when we drafted Poku, he's not somebody that we're just drafting right now. We're drafting him for the future in 3 or 4 years. You know, that's the same, you know, feeling I have with Derek Lively. And it would be around the same place where Poku was drafted that Lively is going to go. So that's kind of like the consistency I like to see in that, you know, 17 through 20 spot.
Yeah, I'm definitely could quickly outperform expectations and become one of the steals of the draft.
I agree, Ryan.
Just because you find yourself in a spot where you can easily get excited about his potential. And while, like you said, there is improvement needed, that's kind of what is anticipated for anybody who's not picked in the top 5, really. So the areas of improvement are easy to identify. The parts of the game that he does elite are impossible to teach. Like, Nick Claxton for the Brooklyn Nets led the league in block shots, I think. You know, at least most of the year he did. And, like, really, I must not be the only person who hadn't really heard much about Nick Claxton before he did that. So I think there's chances.
Jared Allen is another one. Jared Allen, you know, for the Cavs. Right, yeah. I love, you know, somebody
started
like that.
Started out with Brooklyn also. Like that.
Yeah, like any guys that you have that could start off with this talent of dunking, like, and you hope that you can develop their jump shot, sometimes you got to roll the dice on them. And it's not always going to pay off, but that's why you use a second first-round pick on them.
So maybe there's a chance we take him, but I definitely feel what you feel about that, where it would be maybe a situation, I don't know, where we trade up into like the 18th spot, or not up, but not back.
You're back in the draft.
We keep the 12th spot, and then maybe we do something else to get the 18th.
There's just going to be so many teams that are going to be disappointed when it gets to that mid-20s, you know? And if he drops back to, like, let's say 21, then the value there would be so significant that a team will jump up to try to grab him at 21. You know, like, so if I'm Sam Presti, I'm just watching the board, because the price between, you know, 17 through, you know, 20 is going to be significantly higher than 21 through 25.
How do you feel about using a first round pick on a player like him?
It depends the value. Okay. Like, if we could get 2 highly protected first round picks that we could trade for this pick, mm-hmm. you know, that we would probably never see those picks turn out to be even a top, you know, 23 pick. Like, most likely they'd just be like second round picks. And yeah, I would say that's worth it. But I don't, to me, like, there's going to be so many good players on this board that we've already scouted. You know, like, if Gigi Jackson's available, if, Grady Dick is available. I mean, there's so many guys on this list that, like get me excited about the flow and how they fit inside of this organization. I mean, Nick Smith Jr. So, for me, I look at Derek Lively, again, as a value pick. If we decided to trade our second round picks and another pick to move up and get that. So I don't know, man, like, it's all about the dice roll at this point with a Derek Lively, but at 12, there's just so much talent there. I mean, there's just so much fucking talent that, like, there's going to be somebody that we aren't talking about that we didn't expect to fall that low. Just not, you know, like it's the fact that we were hearing out of Portland that Amen Thompson, like, is starting to be the favored player there at the third pick. Like, shit's strange right now, bro. Like, really fucking strange. So I don't know what to say.
So you think that means that Brandon Miller is probably favored at number two? Because I think that they would probably pick Brandon Miller over Thompson.
I think it's right. I think it's known that he's number two. Okay. Like, I think Charlotte is bought all in. Well, I mean, think about this. So you got Charlotte, right? And Alabama isn't very far. So, and they, you know, the conferences are all together there. Mm-hmm. So they've watched. I can't remember his name now. Brandon Miller,
yeah,
right? He's Alabama, isn't he? Yeah. They've watched him. You know, they've watched him develop. So, like, that's an easy pick there for Charlotte. And that's what I've been saying all along, like, the second that happened. And then as far as Scoot goes, like, I love having this discussion with people when people are like, Scoot is a number three draft pick. You're right, he is. But who is number three? Who's picking number three this year?
Right.
The one team that everybody's going to scratch their heads and go, what the fuck did they do that for?
It's like drafting a quarterback when you already have an all-time great quarterback.
Like, listen, and that's – it's going to suck because that means that Houston's going to get a top three pick essentially in this whole
debacle. Do you think Houston goes with Scoot? Because it seems like they're
– if Houston keeps their pick,
if I was Houston, I would feel like, you know, Green is pretty much the guy. I'd rather probably Green than Scoot if I'm Houston. The rest of the NBA wouldn't, but I think Houston's
You got to go with Scoot because here's the thing about it, man, is that when has it ever been bad in the history of the game to have two really fucking good point guards playing on one team?
I mean, I could see them, you know, doing
and I
it,
look at Scoot.
But I just feel like they need more wings than they need either point guards or bigs.
But here's the thing. I don't think that they're going to keep that pick. If Scoot Henderson's available, that means that pick is incredibly valuable, right? And if they're trying to build a team, it's easy trade bait for a team that's trying to get rid of a player. Like, imagine. I mean, seriously, imagine if, like, you know, since LeBron James has been coming up so much, but imagine if Houston was able to talk LeBron James to coming in there and playing. You know, like, that pick right now, then Scoot Henderson pick with AD looks really fucking good. You know, and that's the thing is that, like, we don't know what's happening in the background.
The thing
right
about
here.
The Lakers is it's amazing how terrible they've been at picking. They've had the number two pick, I think, three times in the last 10 years or something. And it's like Russell, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram. And they moved on all three of those guys. And it's like the number three pick just, like, does probably not sound like a very good deal to the Lakers. Other teams,
but if you get a couple other young players with it, and you get some draft picks to go with it, and then you get James Harden and LeBron James to go together, I mean, it's a sexy, like, little team there. But I want LeBron James to go to a team that is going to get fleeced in the West in order to send stuff back. I want a team like Dallas that's going to have to trade everybody but Luka. You know, I want a team like, you know, Houston that's going to have to trade all their young assets. So after Harden and LeBron James get injured and are done for the rest of their careers, they have nothing left. You know, like, this is what I want, because everybody's like, oh, I don't want Houston or I don't want Dallas to be good. Well, listen, they'll be good for momentarily for one or two years, and then everybody gets old and they all move on. And they lost all these picks to try to win a championship, all these young players because they want to win a championship, and they pushed reset only to trade everything. So for me, that's what I like to see. I want to circle that, and I want to see, where is LeBron James going? Because the rumors that are happening right now, I'm telling you guys, this is proof that things are happening behind the scene.
Tell everybody,
like,
about the rumors.
The next tweet that I just saw was Lakers have pretty much said that they would turn down anything that Dallas would offer them.
Yeah, Dallas doesn't.
Because they have nothing. Yeah, they have nothing they want besides Luka. So that's my point, is that the fact that they're even saying that, right, and not saying, like, he's untradeable, we're not trading him, and they're saying the price is way higher. So now the price has been set. People know what the baseline is. The Dallas can't afford it, so a team like blank is going to have to step up. if they want him.
So you think LeBron will know the price now?
I mean, if he doesn't, I don't think he plays next year.
Really?
Yeah, man. Like, what team does he have around him? AD can't do shit. I thought he was going to be all right, but I mean, he trips and he breaks his finger. You know, like, and like, that's not LeBron-esque. You know, LeBron needs somebody that's going to be dependable, that's going to be able to play, you know, 76 games if needed, and the playoffs. So
I don't know. I think when you,
I don't know, man. Unless you're able to get like Desmond Bane and some other guys like that, like,
they're not getting Desmond reset. Bane, but you know, maybe Dylan Brooks. I just think it's
interesting. I mean, Dylan Brooks, yeah, DB.
It's interesting. I keep saying
DB and Desmond Bane.
That they wasted like the first half of the season with a team that wasn't working out, and they kind of hit the reset button, and there was a little success with that. But it's almost like there's no way they're going to run it back. But you look at a team like the Nuggets, and you can see the value of camaraderie of the Heat, yeah. And you see a team that, like, hey, they've been there together before, and it matters. So I do feel like the Lakers would be fine if they built.
They're going to have to pay Austin Reeves $100 million to keep him, bro. I mean, that's my point, is that, like, you've got an age gap with young players that are, you know, starting to look really good, and then you got old players that you could trade to get young players. And the thing is about it is that if the Lakers are halfway intelligent, like, stripping down their team right now and trading all their assets they have is the only way through this, because they need to replenish their assets, because LeBron James is leaving next year. AD is leaving. I mean, they might be able to get AD to you know, sign another contract, but then you know that he's only going to play one full season in that 4 years he's going to do. So, like, you've got to reset now while everybody's healthy. And I'm happy. It makes me happy because we reset way before them. So we're going to be 4, 5, 6 years ahead of them when they're starting to their rebuild. And if you look at that, the entire West is like that. The top echelon of the West right now. So the last, you know, decade where we see the Lakers, you know, we see Golden State, you know, you throw in there the Clippers, like, they're all aging, you know, they're just, and it's just a matter, I mean, Suns, they're all aging, guys. They're all getting old. They're all getting to that point where they don't have any draft picks to help them rebuild. So the time's coming when they have no cap space, they have no star talent because nothing, and then they have no picks. And they're like, shit, what are we going to do? Well, you're going to have to sit there and suck for another decade. And it's going to be, I mean, it's going to be rocking, man, because we're going to have at least 4 or 5 teams that are going to be sitting there like, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? How are we going to rebuild? Because we suck at this. We have no picks. We have no picks until 2027.
You got to trade some of the players while you got, they got value, but.
Well, that's what Sam Presti is so amazing at, man. Like he recognized that with Russ. He recognized that we got burnt with KD and he could not get burnt with Russ. And it wasn't that he was going to get burnt with Russ. It was that he could get value for Russ. 2 first plus Chris Paul.
Pick swaps.
Chris Paul got 2 first, right? Plus a couple of young assets. But more so, we put Chris Paul in a place that he can win.
Yeah, I thought
it's beautiful, man.
I thought that we got 1 first round and a couple of seconds, but you know, whatever. You're probably right.
I think it was a heavily protected one that didn't turn into anything. I don't know. I thought we got 2 first, but
so Ryan's asking us, with Will Dawkins leaving and becoming the Wizards' number 2 in their front office, can we see a package to move up to number 8? We have Will Dawkins on the inside.
Mark, you remember Will Dawkins when we saw him next to Sam Presti at the beginning of the season, and he was answering questions.
I thought for sure he was going to end up becoming the GM here.
And listen, this might be a move for him to get more experience someplace else and then come back when he's ready. But I'm excited for him.
Yeah,
I really am. And I listen, as far as moving up to 8, he would have to want a piece that we have, a piece like, let's say, Trey Mann. And our 12 or something like that. And like the thing is, and probably a possible like shitty ass pick, but Dawkins knows everything. Our front office, front and left. Like, if I was Sam Presti right now, I would be like, you know what? I'm not trading with the Wizards right now because I'm afraid I could get fleeced by Dawkins. I mean, that's, you know, when somebody knows like what size underwear you are and the color of underwear you're wearing and all that other stuff. Like that's what you don't want. You don't want to leave that door open for a guy that just left your organization is trying to prove his loyalty towards the Wizards and is like, hey, listen, we could get this player, this player, this player, because I know that they don't value them. Plus this, this, and this, because I know they don't value it for this pick. And it, you know, again,
who would we pick at
stay away
eight?
From doing trades with somebody that just left your organization.
If we did, Dave, who would we pick at eight? But by the way, the way we ended up getting Victor Oladipo and Sabonis was somebody who had recently left the organization and took over the Magic. So there are ways that they work out favorable for us.
Yes.
But
yes, there is.
Who would we pick at number eight if we had that?
Jairus, man.
Jairus Walker, okay.
Yeah, if he was available there at eight, I would. That's who I would go with. His upside and his up potential is through the roof. We need a stopper that can play power forward, a center position. Houston, you know, protege right there. I really like him. And here's the thing about it too is that if Scoot Henderson goes four, right, I think that leads the way for him to scoot back, because I really felt that Houston wasn't in love with Amen. And that there is more chance that somebody jumps to number four, and that player I thought could be Walker at number four, it jumps Amen. But again, we're not seeing that. So I think this is going to be interesting to see where Jairus Walker goes, and I would love to see him with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
All right, man. That's dope. When is the next finals game? They took 3 days off after, or like 2 days off, I mean, between the last one. Normally, it's been a day off in between, so.
It was switched.
8:30 Wednesday, so tomorrow night. All right. You got a pick?
I'm down with tomorrow night.
You got a pick?
What's
you
that?
You got a pick for the game?
Yeah, dude. Heat, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm really excited about him.
Wow.
All right, so ESPN just came out with a prediction, and they still have us with Nick Smith Jr.
Okay.
And they have Jairus Walker going to number five, Detroit. You know what's crazy, man? Have I been getting the twins mixed up, the Thompson twins mixed up?
I don't know. I haven't really dug into their games as much as other players.
I need to, because ESPN said Asar Thompson is number four and Amen is number eight.
Okay.
Which again, I need to figure out which twin is which.
Coming up next, guys, we'll figure out who is who. Yeah, dude. We need to dig into that. It's been different this year because we don't have a, you know, top six picks. So in that sense, we've kind of been focused on more of the mid to late lottery.
But today, when we were talking about Derek Lively, if you guys missed it, we talked a little bit there about Derek Lively in the beginning. Like, again, his game and the defensive impact that he would have right away would be spectacular. The offensive impact is the one thing I'm concerned about, because the way this offense is rotating and moving, having a guy that can't make a jump shot or shoot a jump shot effectively is the concern. You know, we need to make sure that we keep that mid-level game, you know, fluent. But he is somebody that can impact the game right away on his defensive side. So,
what do you think we're going to get from Poku this year?
When he gets back from breaking his arm,
which is,
and hopefully it's ready.
It's a shit injury if you're experiencing it, but overall, for like, he'll be able to stay in shape. He'll be able to continue to progress. Which arm do you know?
Staying in shape, eating, all that other stuff he needs to make sure that weight. And the thing about it is too, is you can do a lot of weightlifting even with a broken arm. So he'll be all right. But I look at kind of where he's at, and he needs to be somebody that can average 2.5 blocks a game. Just needs to be. If we need to get him to that elite level defensively for him because of Chet, you know, these guys need to be able to play on the same court at the same time, and also be able to Chet needs to be able to come out of the game, and Poku needs to step up so there's not much defensive change.
So
there.
Let me ask you about Derek Lively, because Poku, sure. Chet, Derek Lively. How would that work if we had that?
Well, I've said for a long time that the big man in the NBA needs to be a big man by committee. Mm-hmm. You need to have your power forward and center that can be an interchangeable position, that you can go with, let's say, Chet. Chet's going to the center. He's going center for the first 7 minutes of the game. Okay, he's going to play the center on defense, play the center on offense, and then he's going to switch over to the four for the next 7 minutes, right? And that's his rotation right there, his 14 minutes that he'll play before getting pulled, right? So before resting. So 13, 14 minutes, whatever it is. So playing the center and then the power forward, and then that way you can have Poku and you can have J-Dub and you can have Kenny Hustle. You can have Jay Will, J.R. Ree, whoever else that we have playing at the center or power forward position coming in and rotating in that position. Because it's one of those things where if it's just one player, right? And we know Coach D, he doesn't like just one player there. He wants to know what's the biggest mismatch for the team so we hit the fourth quarter and we can go blitz. You know, it's what Eric Spoelstra is so good at. We're watching Coach D develop into that. So I like it when we're rotating and we're having, what, six guys fill those two positions throughout the game. That's what needs to happen. And it also allows J-Dub to cover down and play a different position when Dort comes out of the game, or when Shea comes out of the game, or when Giddy comes out of the game. So you can just rotate these guys in multiple positions. And I think that's what's so sexy about it. And that's why I look at Lively and I say, if he's not playing the center position, then he has to have a jump shot for that forward position, because then he's only playing 7 minutes in his rotation. And I think that's the key, is like this rotation that's Sam Presti and Coach D have really worked out, because they work hand in hand of getting this, is that you have to have that different player and different style just consistently, you know, rotating. And it makes it look really nice, man. It makes it so that these guys know exactly what they're doing, how they're doing it. And it doesn't matter if you're playing power forward or the center position. And we know that Kenny Hustle can play both positions. We know J-Dub can play both positions. You know, like Josh Giddey, if we needed to, he can play every fucking position on the court. You know, like, this is what I love about this team. That's why it's so powerful. That's why when we're looking at Derek Lively, it's like, this guy is a great player, but he needs this, this, and this to be able to fit on this team. Because this is what this Oklahoma City Thunder organization is all about. It's this idea of this rotation of players, next man up, yes, but this is to a whole new level. You know, like, we're getting an irregular game in the season, we're getting 10 to 12 guys rotating in and out and getting serious minutes. Mm-hmm. Like, what other teams are doing that? It's because we're so thick and so deep that nobody can fuck with us.
Yeah, dude, for real. But yeah, I mean,
what's up, Frank?
You mix up that and you mix up the whole idea that player development is a, like, there's different lanes for minutes with our team, right? And giving players who aren't ready for NBA minutes is one of those lanes that the team has set aside for, you know, draft picks, players that are on their way to their G League, two-way players. All these guys get minutes, and that ends up meaning a lot of games will run at 14, like, which is,
you're right,
really unheard of.
And it's fun.
And then it had a lot of people, I'm not going to mention any names, but a lot of people who proposed to be experts really questioning whether or not Coach Daigneault understood how to shorten a rotation.
Which, by the way, we want to say this. I respect all the other podcasts out there, but if you don't understand what's happening in the Oklahoma City locker room and an Oklahoma City bench, you should probably not talk about it. Because when people are yelling and being like, his rotations are so off, and then you get to the fourth quarter, and it's like the team dominates the fourth quarter, and everybody's like, well, how did that happen? It's because their rotations are so off.
But there's always the assumption, if he had just done the right thing the whole time, then it wouldn't have been a close game in the end.
But how do you do that? You do that by experimental shit, bro.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Experimental shit, dude. You gotta give Jang minutes. You gotta give Poku minutes. You gotta give players opportunities to find their groove and then go work on their game and get better. But for sure, listen, Frank, you're talking our language right now.
Yeah,
Bilal, he's the man. And I always say his name wrong. Now,
Bilal.
James, I don't know how to say his name, so I'm not gonna even try. James Nnagji. I do not know his game, so I'm going to add his name to the list, and we'll continue our breakdown. We're definitely still adding names to the list. I think the draft is on the 22nd, So, you know, a couple weeks away.
I can say from what little I've noticed about James Nenji. Is that how you say it? Nenji? I try, guys. I fail it every single time. In fact, every single time I said Bilal, I think about our really good friend Wash, who told me that I was saying Bilala, like that, I believe I was saying, was incorrect, and I was saying little dick in Arabic.
Yeah, dude.
So I've got to watch how I pronounce names. So if I'm saying his name wrong, I really like this young man. I think that he could have an impact in the game, but a lot of work needs to be done on both Bilal and James.
Dude, so, Bilal is like people. I don't spend much time on Twitter, which is good because Twitter's not a good place for me. But like,
dirty, dirty place.
I've noticed a lot of people are talking about Bilal on Twitter.
Yeah,
like maybe he'll move up into the top eight level. People are just like getting really pumped.
They should.
Is that too high for him?
Bro, how many times have I said there's going to be guys that are unexpected that jump this draft? Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. We're going to see guys that are like, you and I are going to look at and be like, you know, when we're doing our live show on draft, and you and I are going to be like, what the fuck? What? Hooting it. Then we're going to have to go back to the drawing board. Who's available at 12 again? Because it's going to be so shocking to some of us because people are still in that idea of picking for the needs. Right, there's a difference between picking the youngest and best player and picking for your need, right? And there's this warped idea that teams are starting to get with Dallas and some other teams that are going to probably pick a guy that maybe needs a little bit more work, you know? And it's going to be like, holy shit, how did this guy drop to number 12? It's just impossible. Sammy, what's up, man?
It is impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be incredible.
That's right, guys. My Gaze jersey. Got to show that off right there. Homeboy. Sammy got that for me. Fucking love you, man.
I'm pumped, bro. I think there's a lot to be said. And Frank is talking about James. Did say it again, Dave? I'm sorry.
Nanji.
Him being this generation Serge Ibaka. So, obviously, I want to check that out. Now, we've talked a little bit about a couple of players. One player I want to talk about coming up as soon as possible. I've done a little bit of research on him, which is unusual before we talk about a player. But I'm talking about City Sissoko, who plays...
Naji. Thank you, Frank.
City Sissoko plays for Team France. So does Bilal. So does... what's his name? The big guy, Victor. So does the new guy coming up, Sar's brother. He's coming up.
Yeah, Sar's brother.
Right? We're talking about Team France could have, just this like this upcoming draft, three players that are picked, including the number one pick, in the top 15 or top 20. Next year, Sar's brother has a chance to be one of the top picks. What's going on in France? And have you studied City Sissoko's game yet? And if not, let's do that as soon as possible.
Yeah, we need to spend time. I want to spend more time before I say anything about him because there's this, you know, there's a lot of stuff that needs to be said. But what's happening in France, in my opinion, is what happens when, you know, basketball took over the world in the 90s. Let's just be honest. You know, the Dream Team really captivated enough people.
What's up, George?
So there's a whole generation of people that are our age, Mark, right? Mm-hmm. That are in their, you know, late 30s that, you know, really grew up admiring the game at that age, right? And then you have players like Sabonis, Arvydas Sabonis, and you have guys like that that are coming through the league, that like Dirk Nowitzki, that are recharging this young core of players across the world. And then all of a sudden, you see this social media that goes crazy. And I want to say, I feel like a lot of what's happening now is due to what happened with Chet. When Chet, at 16 years old, made Steph Curry look stupid, right? I think at that point, people started watching, saying that these tall, lanky kids are going to be really fucking good. Before then, nobody knew. They were like, well, this could turn into another Boa Boa situation, or, you know, George Muirson situation, where you got these, you know, great giants and they can't really do much.
Yeah.
You know, like... So before then, I think that's what was happening. Now I think the people in you know, the organizations recognize at that moment that the things are going to change. You know, I mean, that was the moment that I started recognizing that, you know, the NBA is never going to be the same. It's this morphing that's going to start happening. And then all of a sudden it's going to be like, wait, LeBron's era is over. And it's what era now? Because whose era is it? Like, it's going to be like that for a while because there's going to be so many dominant, young, tall, lanky players. And it's going to be from France. It's going to be American. It's everywhere, bro. Mm-hmm. Because these players are spectacular. When I say they're spectacular, I mean, I truly mean the fact is that there's this core of French kids that are coming through that it's going to take, you know, 20 years for us to truly understand their impact in the world.
Yeah. Good point, man. And George has got a good point. Tony Parker and the Spurs, you know,
there we go.
Big
yeah.
bonus there.
You're right, man.
I love it. And
Tony Parker changed French basketball, bro. Changed it, like, completely. Like, he spent so much money giving back to the French community to up the basketball game there. And again, when you have somebody that does that, and you look at, Dirk Nowitzki's impact in the German community.
Right.
You know, you're seeing all these young German kids that are coming through now. It's because when these guys are taking the money and going back and investing it into the young kids, this is what happens. You know, like, that's why it's so important to invest into your young countrymen. Because now Tony Parker, every single one of those young players are going to go play and going to be there for the next 20 years. They're all going to look at Tony Parker. Guess what? All the young players from Australia, they look at Andrew Gaze. Where is that? Right there. They look at Andrew Gaze as being that player.
Spur.
That's it, man. Like, this is it. This is the moment the NBA is changing so dramatically that we are all lucky enough to be part of it. We can either be like, oh, back when the good old days, or we can be like, this is going to be the best generation of young NBA talent that we're ever going to see. Because it's going to take another 30 or 40 years before the time changes so dramatically again. And we see a different young core group of kids that come through. They're like, holy shit, they're defining the whole game yet again. And that's what this is. This is defining the whole game. And we are all on board for some really good times.
100%, bro. Shout out to Shane, Ryan, Joshua, Frank.
George. Sammy.
We love you guys. Impressed that we trust. We will be back tomorrow. So join us then.